I no longer remember what I talked about week by week. So if this is totally replicable of earlier talks, forgive me. I know they all have the same basic construct. I think the message that I want to convey at this moment is a hard message on some level, but it's really the truth. And that is, you're all on your own. Period. Every one of us is on our own. We come here alone, we leave alone. And yet we have this remarkable hunger for other and for community. We talk about others completing us, but it's not true. It's not true. We are complete. We are all complete. We are all who we must be, and we are whole in that. And we are ultimately fulfilled by that. But the experience of completion does not seem to be reflected by the outer world, because it shows us how insufficient we are, how incomplete we are, how dependent we are, how much we need others, how much we need community, family, mothers, fathers, friends. And the idea of being absent of all of that seems really awful. I can only tell you, in the grandest scheme of things, your family, your friends, your community, your teachers, your enemies, everyone out there is collectively who you truly are. You are not separate from anybody at all, ever, except in the manifested world that we are inhabiting. The singularity divides itself into the plurality, into the multiplicity, and we sense, because we are focused on the outer, that what we need is out there. When in truth, out there is really simply a projection of what's in here, and what's in here, if you find it and go deep enough into it, is whole and complete. It completes you. I complete you. A teacher is somebody on the journey who has perhaps, ideally, begun to experience or maybe fully experienced the completion, and then shares it with you as a separate form, as a teacher who goes out there and works with you to help you find not communion in the outer world, although that's a feeling that you get, but the doorway to the thing itself that is the communion you seek, which is your true being, your true self. And I know these sound like hyperbole and all sorts of, you know, woo-woo lines and ideas and things that our world is sort of laughs at. But those of you who gather here know, instinctively you know, there is something going on, something that unites you with you, something that completes you, something that leads you to yourself. Otherwise, you wouldn't gather here. What would be the reason of making these treks to come to a place to be told something you already know? The purpose of it is that the mindscape of the human being does not hold that. It leads endlessly into the busyness and the distraction and the allure and the terror of the manifested world. We need the reminder. We need the reminder every single day, often many times a day, that we are already where we must be. When you live from that internal space, when you start to experience the world from a higher space, this guided space that is not outside you, but really inside you, but appears to be in the heavens. But the heavens, the higher you reach, is really more of an internal experience. You are touching, reaching for the ineffable, beautiful, wondrous truth of something that cannot be spoken but is felt, that you are already complete, already whole, and you're in this on your own. When we come into the world and we become obsessed with other, because we are so dazzled by each other and so intrigued by each other and so fearful of each other, we begin this incredible dance, which is wildly entertaining, wildly. We can't get enough of it. And we come back over and over and over and over to experience this wondrous dance. It has multiplied the reality of our singular nature into something infinitely fascinating. And yet, there is no respite from it. There is no relaxation. There is no withdrawal from it in the world, other than this experience of sleep, which is a conscious part of the patterning. We need to have it because it allows us to quiet it down for a short period of time, to come back to a place unconsciously of singularity, of stillness. And then we break back out into the world that commands all of our time and attention. But the reality is, what you are looking for will not present itself outside you. Even if you find the person you love more than anything in the world, it is a temporary discovery. And if you lose yourself in that love and in that person, there's going to come a moment, possibly in the world, possibly when you leave the world, where you realize that was impermanent. You cannot have that. You cannot have that permanently, not in the bodily material form, but you can have it permanently, so we are told, and so I sense, in this inner space from which that love that you had in your life arrived and returns to. Nothing is new here. Nothing I'm saying is new. The only thing I'm saying is you're on your own. You have to find this space of awareness and understanding and clarity and satisfaction and sufficiency to let you know you can do this on your own. It doesn't mean you can build a car on your own and fix your computer on your own or whatever the limitations we have in this modern world. No, we still need community for that. But to be on your own means that you can do the best you can up until the point that you cannot do anymore. That may lead you to the door of death, where you simply cannot survive in the wild on your own. You cannot find water. You cannot find nourishment. You cannot find release from the freezing cold air or the burning inferno around you. When that happens, and there is no help, you've got yourself. What you would like to have at that moment is not a panicky self still trying to reach for help in the outer world. What you have to find at that moment of finality is this thing that you already are, which is all you've got. That moment, that thing that you are, will either go, yes, thy will be done, or you will go fighting off into the abyss of a being, which I would say is not the way you want to exit this world. Not that I want to focus on exits, but they could happen, and they can happen at any moment. So it's always good to be somewhat prepared for an exit. But it's also good to be prepared to live your life in attunement with you're all you got. However that works, even if it just tells you are so deeply insufficient that you don't know how to cook properly, I can't. I mean, there's a million things I can't do. I don't know what a carburetor is. I don't know how to make something work out there. I need people. I know I need people, but at some point in time, I don't need anybody. And that will dawn on us, each of us, in its own way. And that's the one moment where you have to know you're in it alone, and what you need to carry you through to give you the recipe, to give you the mechanics, to give you the insight, to give you the brilliance to move forward is already in place. And that thing is a profound knowing of who you are. And finding your way to that profound knowing, maybe there are many doors to it, and I don't know because I have not explored the many doors to that knowing. I have explored one door, and it's a door that's relatively common in the world culture, and that door is called sit still. I have labeled it stop, sit, stay. Stop, sit, stay. You got to sit long enough, you got to stay long enough, and you have to be stilled long enough to get through the distraction, the boredom, the misery of being still, of not being entertained, of not being distracted. Just sit still and watch what happens. And again, this is the weekly talk. What happens when you sit still long enough and you do what Rudy said, which is ask inside your heart for help to surrender, to let go of your brain, to let go of your mind, to let go of your need for distraction. Just sit. And I promise you, what happens at that moment is something opens. Again, week by week, knock and it shall be opened unto you. Come in. Oh. It is really there. It is really there. And you go inside and you sit down and it says, welcome home. It does it regularly. And in the end, it's the only place you have to go. And you don't have to wait to the end. If anything, the encouragement of this practice is go there now. Figure it out now. There is nobody but you. You're all you've got. The focus on this for me this week is because a lot of strange stuff is going on in the world and in my own private world. We have this collective societal bizarre toxicity, strangeness, illness in the environment, politically, biologically. So much weird stuff is going on. It's the corollary, the positive side of it, is we all realize we're all in this together. It's a little bit different than saying you're on your own, but in a way, you're on your own. If you're quarantined, guys, you're on your own. Maybe somebody will bring you food. Maybe you're quarantined with somebody else, but you are essentially cut off from the society that comforts you. This alone thing, this sense that you could actually die by shaking hands with somebody, or kissing somebody, or being in an environment with somebody, that's a big piece of news to the fearful being of a human being. You know, everything that represents social connection is suddenly an anathema. You can't go there. It's a negative. That's problematic for how we live. Really problematic. Hopefully it's a short-term thing. But I watch how people react to this societal fear and how much of it is real, meaning I should be careful, I could die in a second, or how much of it is if I wash my hands and if I am careful and I can probably be okay in this world, even though I'm one of those people they call high risk because of age and underlying stuff. But all I can tell you, I'm all I've got. I trust the journey. If the universe is ready for me to be at the end of this ride, I am in love with this connection I have with this higher understanding. And if it says, we want you back. You know, I made this trip to California in the last 2 weeks. I literally said goodbye to everyone I love. I hugged them. I kissed them. I told them I love them. I told them how valuable they were. Not in the way that was saying I'm dying. I didn't do it that way. I just made sure I dotted every I, I crossed every T, I let everyone I know feel the completion that I have in how much I care for and love them. It's not a bad idea to do that. If I have to leave this world in a tenth of a minute or a second, I don't have to go back and say, but. I have no buts. You don't want any buts either. I wrote letters and emails recently to people who harmed me along the way. I just told them how much I loved them and cared about them. And got back the most wonderful responses. And it was like, it's done. It's clean. It's good. I know it's stupid on some level to do stuff like that. Might as well wait. You may have 10 years more, 20 years more, but you may have 2 seconds more. So do this stuff. Get it so you're done. Know that in some way, your responsibility in being all you got is to take care of what you've got. Take care of you, take care of the you that manifests in the outer world as other, and make peace with the world. That's really important. So that's one of my concerns at the moment, that people are panicking and projecting all sorts of fears into the world and doing all the weird things that people do, hiding away, storing everything. You know, do the right thing. Buy some extra food, get wash your hands a lot. Of course, do all that stuff. But don't cut off your life yet. Find a way to live as deeply as you can within the confines of what's reasonable. If you are told you are to be quarantined, be ready to live in a quiet, simple space and be simple and at peace with yourself. The other thing that's happening is that we are losing classroom space in Los Angeles. I have taught class in Los Angeles for 35 years in my home. We always made a space in the house and we always opened up the house, and every Sunday with my kids playing off in their own room or something else going on, people gathered, went up to the classroom, we sat down and we had class. When Blanche and I started living in other homes, like in Rhinebeck and then up Seattle and San Rafael, we had people like Jackie who would continue the class and have other teachers in the classroom space, having this class go on all the time, whether we were there or not. When we left New York, we were unable to sustain a space, so I would come back to New York 3 times a year, get a space that we used to have in Big Indian, New York, and I would at first be given the space, then we had to rent the space, but it didn't matter. And I would give classes 3 times a year for 2 days for a long weekend, and that was really wonderful. Having left Los Angeles with nothing there except one home where the class was being taught, now we're losing that. And there is no place. I don't have a home. I don't have anywhere to go. Maybe there are places to rent. We've never done that. But in leaving LA after 35 years, I have reached out to all the students and everyone there and to see if there's any option for somewhere else to teach a class. I haven't heard back really, but my sense is most people do not have space in their home for classrooms. So it feels like this period is coming to an end, 35 years of teaching. I do not feel regretful. I do not feel sad, really. What I feel is it is time to pass this all on to the people who have come to class for years and remind them, as I started at the beginning of this talk, you are on your own. You're not on your own now in an abstract way. You're really on your own in terms of your spiritual life. You've had however many, 35 years, 10 years, 5 years of this practice. It is good training. It is good groundwork for all of you. If there is no one left to teach you, and there is nowhere to go that you feel connected to, or if you even feel like enough already, that's fine. But if you feel that you need to grow and you need to continue this practice, you don't need a classroom, you don't need a teacher, and you don't need me. All you need is you to sit down regularly, more than once a week, I would say, sit down and do this practice, or a practice. This practice I can only attest to is because it's what I've done for all these years. I think it works. Your own practice, let that either be this one or something else you find, but take responsibility for you, for your spiritual life, for your material life, because you are all you've got. That's the truth. From beginning to end, you are all you've got. And it's really important to get that. I cannot promise I will come to California 3 times a year to give classes. When I came 2 weeks ago, the class was huge and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. But I am told none of those people come to class when I'm not there. I never wanted this to be the Bruce Rubin show. Rudy never wanted it to be the Rudy show. It's not about the persona. It is not about the articulation of a particular vision. It's about sitting with a teacher, probably an imperfect teacher, because we are all imperfect teachers, and learning how to open your heart to somebody at a depth that, other than the person you sleep with, maybe, you've never opened up to before. Learning how to open your heart to other, how to open your third eye, your throat chakra, your heart, your navel chakra, your sex chakra, the base of your spine, to another being. Even if they are not the best teacher in the world, you can become what I call the best student in the world. Just learn how to do it. And if you practice with multiple teachers, you will learn how to do this in a lot of different ways. And you may become a teacher, you may already be a teacher, or you may just be the most brilliant student ever, which is the best kind of teacher there is. I think teaching has so many liabilities. The biggest liability of teaching is thinking you know anything. It is a killer. Once you arrive at that point, it's over. Teaching is the profound not knowing. It is finding and discovering and sharing, helping others on the road without giving them the assurance that you know where you're going, but that the light that's shining on you still has another piece of solid ground in front of it. It's the best we can do. It's the best we can do. But my experience of going inside is that there is, as I've described many times, a map. It is a navigator or a navigational system that helps you know where to go. And if you develop one of the key ingredients of a spiritual journey, which is called trust and faith, you follow it. Is our trust and faith sufficient? Is it well born? Is it meant to be? You know, it is possible in our unknowing that we are putting faith and trust in the most absurd, untrustable thing imaginable. It's possible. I don't discount that 100%. I have moments where so much is taken away from me that I don't know what to believe. But then, the thing that keeps returning to me and that guarantees me some sense of the power of my faith is love. Love or beauty or truth. Even in the loss of everything, including faith and hope, even in the loss of it, and trust me, if you're really on this journey, you're going to lose all of those things. What comes back is this exquisite truth. And I don't know how to describe that truth, except in its most elemental form, it is I am. I am. Somehow there is an I to whom this is all occurring, or I am the thing itself that is occurring. Somehow in the middle of that awareness, it is a beautiful piece of knowing. And this thing happens that arises that is called love. Love. It's, oh, that's all it is. Oh. That is as big as it gets for me. That, oh, expands out into the universe, and it just ripples out in these vast waves of embrace. And it embraces myself, and then somehow, as it emerges, it embraces other, which is you. And then we embrace each other, and as we all play in this sandbox of spiritual being, we find our way into our own space and realize there's only one of us playing, period. Now, I know that doesn't cognate easily, but you learned that. So the fact that we're all alone in this on our own means, to those of you who are in Los Angeles and now suddenly perhaps without teaching, without a class, without anywhere to go, you are not left alone. There are a number of things. One, for whatever it's worth, as long as we have an internet, these talks will continue online. And there are a lot of other great teachers out there. I don't pretend to be the teacher. I'm just a teacher. You can listen to any of them. You know, I love Adi Ashanti. I love Eckhart Tolle. There's so many really wonderful people that you can go to and let that speak to you, or turn off your YouTube and turn off your computer and go to the same place that those people went to and that I go to, which is right here. And the place that I go to inside is as informed and rich and complete and absolute in its awareness and its wisdom and its knowledge as in you as it is in anybody else. You may not have the articulate aspect. Speaking it to the world is a thing that certain people have. I was given that gift as a writer, as a speaker. I don't know where that came from, but I have that gift. I know artists who have the same gift who can't speak a word but can do a painting that just goes, wow, Betsy, you were one of those people. There are certain people whose work just suddenly speaks to you. It speaks of something else. It's not verbalized, isn't articulated in the same way, but it is not at the core of the teaching. I have met people, I met a friend of ours who died many years ago, Barbara Boster's mother, was a belly dancer. And I could tell when I met her, she worked in a factory and she went every day, and the ladies in the factory loved each other, and their great joy in the world was belly dancing at night in this club. And she showed me some of the moves she did, and I knew the minute I saw her moves, this was a teaching, kind of a perfect teaching. She was full of joy and her belly dancing spoke to the world. There are so many ways to teach. If you're a belly dancer, do your belly dancing. If you're a teacher who speaks, speak. If you're a teacher who draws, draw. If you're a teacher who just expresses stillness, be sufficient in that. Just be still. If you can do an open-eye meditation with people, ideally, I think you can do this particular practice, but I have to give it to you personally. I have to give you an introduction to it. You can't just sit and look at people. But you can actually begin to feel into another human being and find that which loves them, that knows them, that appreciates them, that does not judge them, that just sees the beauty unraveling and helps it unravel. That's all a teacher does. You help another human being become themselves. That's what you do. And you don't do it by putting them down or scaring them. You do it through love and through sensitivity and consciousness. Those of you who are finding yourself suddenly on your own, just remember that is the human condition, period. We are all on our own. None of us are bereft or devoid of God, none of us. But if you can't find God, if you can't find yourself, if you can't find that which is deeply already within you, it's because you're not looking properly. I will say this for the millionth time, sit, stop, or stop, sit, stay. Get there long enough. Ask in your heart for help to surrender. Take a breath in there and quiet your mind, hold your breath. Quiet your mind and ask for help to surrender and sit long enough. It might take half an hour, it may take a week of half hours, but suddenly something will open and you'll go, oh, oh. You'll go, was that it? Was that really it? I don't know. And then your mind will come into the picture and you get into trouble, but keep trying it and go, okay, that feels good. It's a little bit like when you start to fall asleep at night, and you've all had this. You get in bed and you're, the day is still there, and then this little thing happens like goes, oh. And it just goes, come on, let's go. And you don't fight it too much, some of you do, but most after a while you just go, oh, thank you. And you go in. That's what it feels like to go into your heart chakra. Oh, thank you. Only instead of going in unconscious and asleep, you go in like, oh, and you're really, really awake. Down the road, you'll start to learn, as I'm learning, that they start changing your sleep patterns and they teach you all night long. There's work all night long. There's opening and deepening and engaging and seeing, and it's you, and you have to finally go, okay, they're not going to let me sleep. They're going to keep me working. And you have to say, okay, because there's no one else around to teach you. You're on your own. If you're on your own and this process happens all 24 hours a day, and you may feel, how am I going to get through the day? And your day may be impacted, and you may start to, in fact, lose your health as a result of things like that. But I hate to tell you this, you're all going to lose your health. Every one of you at some point. And part of that process is all the disintegration of normal processes and patterns and routines that you've lived most of your life. It's all going to start to change around. And yes, your health will at some point go, unless you pay a lot of attention about how do I stay healthy. And they'll say things like, take a nap during the day, or two naps, you'll be fine. Eat a little differently. Do something that helps make you feel better. Whatever that is, this knowledge base will come through and it will instruct you until the end. And then at the end, in fact, it doesn't stop helping you, it's all you've got. All you've got is you, and if you've figured out who you are, you've got everything you need. Everything, everything, everything that you need is right here. So I tell it to the class here in New York, even though you still have, I guess, me. We have Blanche, we have this house, we have an assembly point. We can come together. It's a very rich, wonderful Sunday morning space, and it's available. To all of my LA students, I feel terrible, in a way, for abandoning you on some Bruce Rubin level, but I don't feel bad for abandoning you or returning you, if you will, to yourself. That is what I'm doing. You guys have what you need. If you don't feel you have what you need, look for other teachers. Come here and visit. You're always welcome here to visit. But if you don't have what you need, God bless. I hope you find it. But you've had years of practice. You've had years of teaching. You've had years of people helping you on this journey. Now take the responsibility of carrying yourself the rest of the way. So, I send nothing but love to you guys in California, in LA. Guys up north who are still practicing and teaching, you know I love you guys so much, and your devotion to this, you're allowing this to continue in such a big way is really amazing to me. And I will do my best to support all of you in my effort to get there. But I'm getting old, and these airplane flights are less appealing. But I will find a way to do it, and hopefully this practice we have will not fade away, but the best way for it not to fade away is for you to practice, period. Last word, the one I started with, you are on your own, and I love you.
I'm woken up a lot at night. And to me, it's the call to get up, to sit in front of my altar and drop tension.
Yep.
What else do you do?
I lie there. I lie in bed and go, okay, you woke me up. Okay, you're not letting me go to sleep. I start to deal with the input of stuff. Mm. And mostly, I try not to engage it with hostility or anger or frustration or annoyance. Mm. I try to go, if this is what you are doing, then I'm going to go yes. And I go yes. And as much as I'm moving toward the madness of frustration, of wanting to go back to sleep and not being allowed to, I'm just there. And I have this little stupid thing on my phone that tells me how well I sleep. I know I'm lying there going like this all night working, and it said, oh, 100% sleep. I do not understand that at all, but I just lie there still and I let this thing go on. I'm not always good at it. There are nights where I like the last few days I had my grandchildren sleeping over and I had to be awake and I had to be available. to those to functioning, you know, and the day did not give me as much time to nap or relax as I would have liked. I took them to the movies and fell asleep at the movies, which was so wonderful. But you have to deal with what's given, and learning to say yes and make peace with it, and seeing it as not torment and not a bad thing, but it's there's a strange kind of teaching that comes in the dreamscape. And I don't understand exactly what it is, but I know my job is not to feel put out and separate and in a way punished, but to find the way of greeting this thing as a given. And it's very instructive. I have at times sat up like you do. I just sit up. I go, well, they're not letting me sleep. And the thing I've been asked to do on occasion, which is really interesting, I'm asked to sit up and love the world is what I'm told. Love the world. And so I go, okay. And I just sit down in my meditative space, open my heart, and I just start loving the world. And I realize they're using me. I don't know why or how, but it's really, it's like a flood of love going out. And I go, you know, they program me, they program me to do this. That's what I do. I don't know why this is the case. I can't, I mean, my original life in Detroit did not move in this direction as far as I can tell. But here I am, talking like I know something, being a person who really has a heart that's evolved, that came kind of through the DNA of my grandmother and my mother. And the more I think about it, I'm realizing much deeper into my family history, we were kind of loving lovers. We were loving people. Loving people can give love. I have learned how to love indiscriminately, if you will. It's not exactly that, but how to love past judgment, which is a really powerful thing, because it can't be yes, you and not you. It has to be the totality. And when you learn that, this works. And when they have you sit up in the middle of the night and send out love, it's not about you, it's about other, but you do it. And you have a great capacity for that. You know, and when you sit there, whatever, I think you may find that that instruction comes through, if nothing else, as a memory of what we just said here. Just send it out, because you do know how to do that. You know how to love. Does that help?
Mm-hmm. Two things. You mentioned about carburetors. I don't think cars have carburetors anymore.
Is that true?
Well, that's true.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Go on. Go on.
The second thing is, we're sitting here watching you on the screen here. You could be sending this class to California. Maybe it's time to do that.
Well, it's online. This is online. All they have to do is go onto YouTube under my name.
No, I'm talking about the class. You could have a live class.
A live version of this.
That's what we used to do, and I mentioned it to you some years
ago.
We'll have to
talk about that. People have mentioned that. If it's a live class here, I guess it would be 8 o'clock in the morning there, which is not terrible. I wouldn't be able to see people, and I don't know how that would work exactly.
Well, you can if you want to. You can have I forgot which program it is, but you can see the
Zoom.
Zoom.
Well, I'm going to throw this into your lap or anybody's lap who wants it to tell me how to do that. And I would open that door.
Pretty easy.
Okay. Well, if that's true, I mean, I don't know where the screen would be if there were 30 people there. I'd see them and see everybody here. It would be a different situation.
Yeah.
But I, you know, why not? I'm open to that.
Yeah, I think maybe it's time. You know?
Well, it's either time for that or it's time for people to do what I said. Do it on your own. You know? I mean, there's only so much technology that we have.
Yeah.
And also, this is, you know, it's not that scary to do it on your own. It's just not. I mean, after Rudy died and I left the ashram, I was doing it on my own and doing fine. And then I decided I wanted students again after some years. And I think I told you I taught a class at continuing ed at Northern Illinois University. And then when that class was over, it was just hatha yoga. I said, I can teach a meditation if anybody wants to come. And everybody raised their hand. And suddenly, for the next three years in DeKalb, Illinois, I had a classroom full of people, some of whom still continue to practice. So you can do that. I mean, I'm not sure how you build a following. I don't even care about building a following. for me, it's always been people show up and they tell other people and they come. If they don't come, here's a really interesting and I think important thing. Both Blanche and I have had the experience of teaching one other person when nobody else showed up. And Blanche says to me, and I feel the same thing, those have been among the best classes ever taught. There's nobody else but two people. It doesn't take numbers. Numbers does not add to the intensity or the magnitude of what happens here. One other person is enough. If you're thinking you can't teach a class because you don't have enough students, that's your mind talking. And if you think you need a stadium full of people, good luck teaching a stadium full of people. You know, it's like a mass hypnosis. It's not impossible. Rudy actually told me how to do it. He gave me a very interesting instruction. He said, use the sun. Draw from the sun and teach outside. Draw from the sun and use that energy to fill the stadium. I've never had to do that. I don't know if that would work or not. I'd probably get sunburned more than anything else. But I really think the mere fact that he talked about it was interesting to me. I do think the world is going to need more help. And if everyone who's doing this on their own starts to do it and maybe help other people do it, it will go out there in some way on its own and start to be of value. But there are a lot of really bad teachers out there, and there are a lot of bad Rudy teachers. I don't want to be critical, but there are teachers teaching versions of all of this that I think probably wouldn't hold up if they're coming through somebody, or they're coming from somebody, let's say, rather than through. I get it. I don't want to even be critical of that, because they're all well-intentioned in most cases. Maybe not all, but many are well-intentioned. The reality is each student is responsible for the teacher they choose. That's all I can tell you. You get the teacher you want. I wanted Rudy. I knew when I met this guy, it was like click, click, click. And I had just met, I don't know how many teachers in Europe, and excuse me, in India. I met so many teachers. And I went, no, not my teacher. No, not my teacher. And major teachers, including, I think I've told the story 1,000 times, the Dalai Lama offered me directly to be my teacher. And I said, forgive me, but I don't think you're my teacher. But if I continue in this and don't find my teacher, would you still be open to my coming back? And he, the only one, said, of course. The only one. And in some ways, he remains a kind of lodestar out there for me, because he has taught me one of the greatest elements of anything I've ever learned, which is the true power of compassion. And I don't have to sit at his feet to know that. He's teaching me even as I speak. So, but Rudy was he, from the very first second, that was who I wanted. To this very second, my heart goes out to that being and that practice, and it's completely internalized, and I have grown from my 50 some years of sitting with him, of sitting in the work. So I think we're all, we have to find our teacher. You have to know who that teacher is, and then you have to bring yourself to the table. If you do that every Sunday morning, it will help. If you do it every day, it will really grow into something. Like going to the gym once a week produces one result. Going to the gym every day produces another result. 3 hours at the gym every day produces something pretty phenomenal. And if you can get this working to 24/7, which is kind of what it really leads to, you have no idea where it goes. I can only tell you that the journey I'm on right at this moment is so beyond anything I had ever imagined possible in the human experience. I kind of got glimpses of it back in LSD days of 1965, however many decades ago that was. Now it's just happening. It's a real living thing. And I don't mean to reduce it to an LSD thing, but it really, that was my first glimpse of it's big, it's demanding, and it is reality beyond anything the normal human mind can ever understand. Mystics have known it long before LSD. People have awakened to this truth. Living it for your whole life is like the most remarkable journey possible. And anyone who's sitting in this room or listening to this talk is being drawn toward that possibility, if you want it. It's a rarefied space. It is not easy to live in matter and no matter, if you will, mind and no mind at the same time. But it's rich beyond belief. It has a promise beyond anything I can talk about or explain. I don't even know how you speak this stuff after a while, but you live it as best you can. That's all I can say. And I would live it on my own. I would live it with just me and Blanche, but living with you guys arriving to share it just enriches it dramatically. And what happens in this class, which I call a cross-pollination, all of our energies are distinct and unique, but they work together. And when the class is happening, I feel like a bee going from one to another, you know, and all of these energies are merging, and everyone walks out of this room carrying more than they came in with. It's a really beautiful thing, and it tastes like honey. It's really sweet. It's a great gift, and that's what we're doing, and we'll keep doing it until no one shows up, and then the message again of this talk, you're on your own. And it's not a bad thing. Blanche will be here. You are not on your own. You have a great source of joy. And on the other hand, I look at every one of you as sources, great sources. Okay, any questions?
I just want to say one thing, and I hope this goes out to somebody in Los Angeles. When you open your home, however small, and people come, you get so much more than what you think. Oh my gosh, I have to clean up, I have to do this, I have to provide paper plates. I had it in my own experience when I taught from my house. Terry and Brian did. I remember there were times I'd go to sit with Terry. He had just gotten off a plane from Mumbai, you know, and I was like, how do you do it? He said, same thing. You sit on the cushion and you open and everything else falls away. So my hope is that somebody in Los Angeles or maybe a few people who think, gee, we could kind of do this.
I'm getting indications of a few people with very small spaces willing to open them up as small spaces. That's fine. I will definitely put that out there if that's in the end what we're going to do. And let it be small. I mean, they cannot take more than 6 or 7 people. I have no problem with that. So we'll do what we can do. But I really want this talk to be something I can reference to all the people in Los Angeles, because I can't talk to them directly. I can write a little email. But I think if they pick up this talk, they can find their way into community or not. If they do, great. If they don't, great. It's all going to be fine, but community has the edge on some level because it feels so good. And I hope people find it. Thank you. Okay, everybody? Thank you. Oops.
One more. Krishna's birthday is in 2 days. And thanks to Bob Singh, we saved your birthday cake from disaster. And then someone else, I don't know who, brought a beautiful chocolate cake as well. So,
Betsy did. Thank you. Thank you. I did. I guess maybe I must have announced it.
If you don't, you try to cut into it. It's quite dense.
Oh, so wonderful. I love it.
You might have to saw it.
Dense, dark chocolate to me is one of the great things in the world. And then we bought there's a whole big thing on the news recently about Chuck Schumer buying cheesecakes for everybody in the Senate. I don't know why I suddenly fixated on cheesecakes. So when we were shopping the other day, I said, well, let's get a cheesecake. And we told them to write happy birthday Bruce on it. Well, as soon as we got to the car, it fell on the ground. And it says, smashy, smashy, smashy. So I don't know how you repaired it, but it may still look something like that. But I figure.
It's totally different.
Totally different?
It's a new cake.
That is fine. I have really come to appreciate the imperfect perfect. That's all I can tell you. If you're looking for the perfect perfect, it's fine, but the imperfect perfect is like the best there is. And somehow most of us represent that. So I can have a schmooshed birthday cake and be totally happy. I'm just happy anybody recognizes it at all, which is sweet. And it's my 77th year, and there's something about that number which I find kind of magical. And I didn't know I'd make it this far because my mom didn't. And my dad went further, but he wasn't still himself. So I can still be Bruce for a little bit. And I, being 77, I think it's going to be a really, I hope people say this, it's going to be a good year. I don't know what that means because I don't know what's going to happen. It's the weirdest year I've ever come into. But I think it's going to be a good year. And if you open up deeply enough, I will guarantee you it will be a good year. So do the work.
So come downstairs.
Come downstairs. I'll be down. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.